Switch it up a little bit. Got to get out of the monotony. Got to not do everything the same way all the time. We don't have a bulletin we follow anyway, so we're gonna switch things up a little bit. Couple songs, get right into some scriptures. I know everybody's surprised this morning, but we are in the Gospel of Luke. What's up, guys and friends? It's Miller and friends. Hooray! Hooray! Yeah, so you may have noticed that we're starting to work towards some different things. We had a staff retreat. We didn't retreat anywhere but to the fellowship hall. But hey, that was not the office, so you know, we went somewhere. And we hung out for about 6 hours both days and have just, there's a little bit of excitement because there's just some new things that we want to offer to you and share with you and tease you a little bit with. So I'm not going to tell you a lot other than that there's some new things coming, and we're kind of focusing in on heading toward that late August when school gets back and people get in the groove, early September when people stop hitting the lake on that Labor Day weekend, and we really roll into the fall. And so all of this stuff that we're excited about is going to culminate from 2 weeks from today when we have our town hall meeting, 2 weeks from today, and up through the next 4 weeks. So we'll be dropping little hints on you, and we'll be showing you some ideas that we have. We actually have a word that we're going to adopt, all right, and kind of take hold of and pray over. So it's going to be good times, good times. We are finishing up the 8th chapter of Luke today, all right, the 8th chapter of Luke. And it is two stories in one, all right? And if you remember correctly, we've been talking about how sin, how Satan, how things that aren't of God, all right, disrupt, all right? They disrupt. So storms are a disruption in the natural order of the physical world, right? And disease are disruptions in the way we are physically and emotionally created, right? Death is a disruption in life because God is the beginning and the end. He is forever and everlasting. He has no stopping, all right? So something that stops is a disruption. So we've been talking about how God has authority, all right, over the physical world, and he has authority over physical things. He has authority over emotional things. He has authority over sin itself. And today, it culminates in kind of a double whammy. This is the only time, all right, only time in the Gospels, in Jesus' life, where a miracle happens in the middle of him getting ready to do another miracle. That's why we have two stories. Our passage is going to start with a story, and then it's going to have a story in the middle, and then it's going to finish the first story, okay? And that's the only time it's laid out this way. So if you've been in church for very long or ever heard the gospel preached, you know about Jairus and his daughter, and you've probably heard of what they call the woman with the issue of blood. The woman with the issue of blood and Jairus and his daughter. That's where we are today. Let's read, and then we will rock and roll. Now, when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. Then a man named Jairus, a synagogue leader, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds, Luke says, almost crushed him. Mark says they pressed in around him. So it was almost like they couldn't get close enough to this teacher. The word is getting out and they've been following him and they've been listening to him. But now they all want to be right there. So they're walking down the street almost as one tight group of people. It doesn't look like a parade. It looks like a mob. They're all squished together. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. We're going to come back and talk about what that looks like, feels like, how Luke says it differently. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. Who touched me? Funny statement right there. Who touched me? Jesus asked. And when they all denied it, wasn't me, I didn't do it, nope. Peter said, Master, and this is funny too, the people are crowding around you and pressing against you. In Mark, Peter says, and you want to ask us who touched you? Everybody. All the folks be touching you, all right? But Jesus said, someone touched. You know, this has to have that angelic thing going on. Somebody touch me. It wasn't just a touch. It was a, whoa, all right? Somebody touched me. Different kind of thing. I know, I love this, only time in the Bible this happens. I know that power, listen, church, it's very important, has gone out from me. Side note, think about this. I'm going to explain it to you in a minute, but it's the only time Jesus heals somebody and didn't know he had done it. Some theology questions in there. So you think on that, because it says, I know the power, what? Has gone out. He didn't force it out. It came out, and then he said, woohoo! Daddy's playing with me. That's what's going on right now. Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, I can't get in and out here. I'm going to have to testify. She could not go unnoticed. She came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, embarrassed, frightened, afraid, but she came. She told why she had touched him and how she had been healed. I was drawn to this man, Jesus. I reached for him, and when I did, I found healing from that which I thought would never be healed. Then he said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. While Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. Your daughter is dead. Don't bother the teacher anymore. Hearing this, Jesus said to Jairus, don't be afraid. Just believe. She gonna be healed. That's Tackett Revised Version. She gonna be, because I'm in my preaching mode now, all right? When he arrived at the house, he did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. They were in the middle of mourning. It was a typical mourning. People were crying. They are weeping, all right? Meanwhile, all the people were wailing and mourning for her. Stop wailing, Jesus said. She is not dead, but asleep. Now, I used to think I understood what this meant, the asleep part, but I did not. My version worked, okay? But when you read and when you study and when you try to move your faith forward, I learned something new this week. I'm going to be sharing that with you in a minute. All right. They laughed at him. They laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. Time out. You ever just knew something? I just knew my life was over. I just knew I'd never get them back. I just knew I'd never have a child. I just knew I'd never be. You ever just know something? You need to throw your just knows away. Only God just knows. You think. You perceive. You guesstimate. You assumalize. It's a word. Look it up. But you don't just know, do you? They laughed at him because they knew, okay, she was dead. But he took her by the hand and said, my child, get up. He did not speak to her as if she was dead. He spoke to her as if she was asleep. Get up. Her spirit returned. Let's not mistake. He did rise her from the dead, and at once she stood up, and then Jesus told them to give her something to eat. Then the woman, that's Mark, okay? Give her something to eat. That's the end of our passage. I want to show you something from Mark later, all right? So here's what we got. Jesus is teaching and preaching, and he's done some incredible miracles, and people are all over him. Emotionally, spiritually, and literally all over him. And they are trying to make their way through the streets, all right? And it's very difficult to do, all right? And Jairus is we are told he is the leader of the synagogue, all right? The book I read said you have to think of this as like the president, all right? He was the top at this particular synagogue, right? He's the top, and he is respected, and people come to him. But he comes into this crowd, makes his way to Jesus, and that's not unheard of because he is a religiously powerful man. But instead of saying or requesting anything, he gets on his knees. He begs this teacher, this healer, this prophet, he begs him to come to the house because his daughter's dying. Now, he believes. He 100% believes that Jesus can heal her. He would sacrifice his stature. He would sacrifice his time. He has come to find this healer and beg of him to come. So he believes that this man can heal his daughter, all right? So Jesus says, let's roll. All right, and the crowd makes whatever turns it needs to make to now head toward the home of Jairus. In the middle of this turn, we have what Max Lucado calls a divine interruption. You see, we live most of our lives focused on that next thing that we have to do, all right? And if that next thing that we have to do runs into barriers, speed bumps, obstacles, traffic in general, it tends to throw us off of our game. We see interruptions as a bother. We see them as hindrances, all right? And I am certain that Jairus and the people with him saw this as an exasperating hindrance because the healer was going to the house, but he stops. He stops because there was another woman there who had no stature. She had no status. The Bible only speaks of her as the woman with the issue of blood. There are three things that can make you unclean in the scriptures historically, like untouchable. They are leprosy, all right? Any kind of flow out of the body that is unstoppable, especially if you are a woman, and touching a dead person. Those are the three things that make you unclean. So this woman is religiously, ceremonially, psychologically unclean. She didn't cut herself, all right? Let's be mature about this. 1 month, she began. 12 years later, still going. Now, I recognize that every woman in the room is like, oh, trust me, so is every man. But in the Bible, snorteth. In the Bible, this was different than just, oh, she cranky. It's different than, oh, I have a physical problem that is painful, okay? This is, after a month, I'm seeing my doctor. After 3 months, I'm seeing the specialist. After 6 months, I'm going to Cleveland or Duke or Houston. And in Mark, it says she had spent all she had. So they had busted their life savings out to try to find it. Luke leaves this part out and simply says there was no cure. Why would Luke have left what Mark left in out? Anybody know? He was a doctor, all right? He didn't need to go into all that and be making fun or saying something bad about the other doctors in town, right? He simply said, I acknowledge that there's nothing, listen to this, on earth that could be done for her. But you have to realize something else. Yes, she was physically hurting, but listen to me. Your blood, it is the life source of who you are, all right? When your heart stops beating, that's the end. No matter what happens to you in the end, everybody dies of a heart attack, all of us. It may be a disease that takes us, but you die, what? When the heart stops, when the blood quits flowing. Her life had been literally ebbing out of her for 12 years. She was dying for 12 years. Now you have to think about this. This woman, frail does not describe this woman. 70, 75 pounds max. Muscles have deteriorated, just skin around bones. You could see the radius and the ulna, right? The two bones in her lower arm. Her face sunken in. Her hair barely there. Thin, stringy, just she's physically spent all she had. She's emotionally spent all she had. If she had a family, she hasn't seen them in 12 years. They can't touch her. Look, they can't touch anything that she has touched. Doorknob. She has been removed from her home so that her family can live the life. She's on the streets, okay? She's financially spent, emotionally spent, spiritually spent, socially spent. She can't go to the synagogue. She can't be touched by the priest. There's nothing about life that she has left. She finds a way through the stares and the criticism and the nasty looks. She finds a way to get to this man she heard about and reach out long enough to touch what the Bible describes as the hem of his garment, okay? So it was either the very end of his cloak that had the hem on it, right? Or there were ceremonial tassels tied to the corner, and she could have reached out and touched one of those. That gives us an interesting side note about prayer and about the power of symbolic things, because if she touched that, that relates back into the Jewish culture and their prayer stuff, like you know, prayer beads, you know, Catholics and stuff, same type of deal, right? And so there's an idea that touching that would have had some significance. I love the symbolism there. I do not like the fact that this could have been anything but Jesus. I don't care if it was the hem of a garment. I don't care if it was a string that was attached. I don't care if it was a hair on the back of his head. This was Jesus. And she leans out and she touches him, and the crowd continues to move, but Jesus stops. Like, all right, this is a lot like the pigs the other day, right? Something happened. Now, in my deranged mind, I think that Daddy's proud this day because, you know, we know that Jesus is God and God is Jesus. All that's good. But we also know they are separate but together. So this is one of those moments where I think it was fun. I think God's up there surveying everything, you know. Jesus is doing his thing and he's like, it's my boy. I'm proud of my boy. Yeah, yeah. Keep teaching. Keep preaching. Oh, look at that little woman. Oh, I got this. I got this. Just touch him, you know. He draws out his little love arrow. Just get there. Get there. 3, 2, 1, woo! And Jesus goes, who touched me? She disappears into the crowd, right? And Jesus is looking around, and everybody's like, it wasn't me, all right? Wasn't me. And then, you know what happened? I think the crowd split because they realized who was standing with them. They'd seen her on the street for years. They knew her. And the crowd separates as if she is some kind of magnet that's been turned the wrong way. And so the separation happens, and Jesus doesn't move because he's Jesus. And when he turns back around, it's just her. God's like, Jesus is like, oh, I got it. We good. Was it you? And Luke tells us that she came and she knelt down before him. And she told him, listen, it's important. I'm going to come back to this at the end of the message. She told him what he already knew. Let me say this again for the people in the back. I don't mean that literally. She told him what he already knew. Confession has nothing to do with passing along information to God. You are not going to wake up tomorrow, feel convicted, pray and let Jesus know that you took a toke of something you shouldn't have and have him go, you did not! You are not going to sleep with someone you shouldn't have. 17 weeks later, pray and let God know that it happened. Let me freak you out. He was there. That'll keep a lot of things from happening if you know Jesus is in the bed too. Let me just set that up. I used to tell teenagers all the time, you know, girls, if a boy asks you to get in the back seat of a car, you just look right at him and say, no, I want to stay up here with you. That's funny right there. And then if they end up getting in the back seat, you will not do something if you think Jesus is sitting right there in the middle going, hey. It's a true story. You get close to Jesus, everything else will work itself out. She fell at his feet, did not inform him of anything. Confession has nothing to do with passing information and everything to do with your heart's understanding. Jesus doesn't save people who don't need saving. He doesn't save the sinless until we recognize our place, recognize our horror, recognize our emptiness. We cannot be filled up. And about the time this glorious, beautiful moment is happening, the servants come rushing back. They tap Jairus on the shoulder and they say, hey, leave the teacher alone. It's over. Listen to me. Leave the teacher alone. It's over. They believed he could heal them. He has power over sickness. But they did not believe that he could raise them from the dead. Only the most powerful, only the most prominent, only the Elijahs and the Elishas, they were the ones who had power over death. This faith healer, and Jesus goes, say, what is this I hear? We must have a mindset, church. We must have a mindset that is like that of Jesus. We cannot see things in this world like this world sees them. When you are eternal, you don't see end. When you are life, you don't comprehend death. When you are forever, you are not bound by space, time, disease, emotion, or anything that has an ending. And Jesus saw no end. And that's what I learned about asleep. She is not dead. She is asleep. Because when he calls her asleep, a human being understands that at the end of sleeping, you have wake. Yes, sleeping implies that there will be a moment where she will wake up. He doesn't see death. He sees nap time. And we have to learn to see life as he sees it. Our lives are also eternal. It is simply about where that eternal is spent. And he walks into the room in the midst of a group of religious people who are weeping at her death, and he says, she ain't dead, and they laugh at him. And so he says, I'll take you, I'll take you, I'll take you. The rest of y'all unbelievers, stay right here. I'll be back. He marches into that room. He speaks to that little girl, not like he was conquering death, but like she was napping. Sticks out his hand and says, time to wake up, baby girl. The Bible says her spirit entered her and she rose. We serve a Jesus who raises the dead to life. We serve a Jesus who makes the unholy holy. We serve a Jesus who makes the broken well, the lame walk, the blind see, who is victor over all of that which is on this earth. In my office this morning, I made it clear to someone that there are two things that Jesus came to do. He came to beat sin and he came to beat death. And because he was fully God, he lived a sinless life. Worthy is the Lamb who was slain. And because he was the Son of God, he beat death, not by beating it in someone else, by beating it himself. God doesn't lose. And he has victory over all things. Do not think for a minute that there is something in your life that he cannot win. Do not laugh when Jesus calls the dead living. Do not laugh when Jesus calls disease nothing. Simply believe that Jesus will do everything he said he would do. Your life can be different. Your brokenness can be whole. Your emptiness can be filled. And this morning, I'm going to do something that I rarely do. I'm going to give you a chance to get it. You see, I believe with all my heart that in your bedroom, in your bathroom, on the floor of the courthouse, or in the aisles in Walmart, you can be saved. I believe at a table at Hardee's, you can find Jesus. But I am not so far gone that I don't believe that everything that I grew up seeing, people coming, taking the pastor's hand and saying, I need this Jesus, can get well too. And a lot of times, all we have to do is stick out our hand. And so today, I want to use the words of Mark in this same story to make a beautiful, life-altering offer to you. For some of you, it will be returning home. For some of you, it will be climbing up out of a pit that you're in right now. For some of you, it will be finally saying for the very first time, I know that I feel unclean. I know that there are years of my life that have drained everything from me. I know that there are things that I have done that I don't think anybody can forgive me for. I know that I am empty, but I know at 11:06 a.m. on the corner of Main and Chestnut, I know that God is real, and I know that He can change me. So I'm going to tell you how, and it's not going to be my words. When Jesus says, who touched me? After the power had gone out. And he ended up face to face with the woman. Here's what happened. This is Mark's version of the same story. Listen closely. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came, fell at his feet, and told him the whole truth. Church, this is the essence of repentance. This is the essence of finding righteousness. Willingness to, despite our emotions and despite the crowd and despite what anybody else says, seeing your value in the eyes of a loving God, whose Father would go past all things human, all things earthly, to save you because of your faith. Stand. Come. Fall at his feet, trembling with fear. There is not anything in there that is not true of all of us. I'm afraid somebody might see. I'm afraid somebody might know I'm a sinner. I'm afraid somebody might know I've done bad things. We've all done bad things. We all are sinners in need of a Savior, and I am asking this morning, who might be willing to come and get well? Who might be willing to come and get right? Who might be willing to come and be saved? And the invitation is this: come, fall at his feet, and tell him the truth. I am broken. I am embarrassed. I am frightened. I am hellbound. I am without words, but I need Jesus. Come on, can't do any better than that. I am without words, but I need Jesus. Every head bowed, please. Every eye closed. Preston's going to play. And the altar is open. I'm gonna just sit right here in the front. Maybe you need me to be the hands and feet of Jesus for you today. Maybe you are ready to jump in that baptismal pool and celebrate what God is doing in your life. Maybe you are ready to finally give up saying, I'll do it next week, I'll do it next month, I'll do it, I'm ready. I gotta fall at the feet of Jesus, forget the crowd. I believe that Jesus wants to do miracles today right here in front of us. I believe that. And I believe that there are warriors right now praying that he does. So right here and right now, if you've got something you want to lay at the feet of Jesus, by all means come. The altar is open. But if you want to give your life to Christ for the very first time, grab the hand of somebody next to you, come alone, raise your hand and I'll come to you. But if you want to be saved today, if you want to have Jesus in your heart today, you come, you take my hand. Maybe you want to say, hey, God's calling me to the ministry. Come on, give it to Him. God's working on my marriage. Come on, give it to Him. But do not be afraid of the crowd. Do not be fearful. Come, fall at His feet and tell Him the truth. See, those aisles, they're open. They don't have gates on them. This altar, it's open. It doesn't have anything on it to keep you from coming. The only thing keeping you from being healed today is Satan whispering in your ear that you're not good enough, or that Jesus can't do it, or that you're too scared. You tell Satan, shut up. You tell the person beside you, excuse me, I'm going to find my Jesus now. I'd love to pray with you. I'd love to introduce you to the person who saved me from my sin, my shame. My God has power over all disturbances. My God has authority over all disruptions. My God has overcome sin and death. And my God still stays, still saves those who call upon His name. Even when I was on the road, I never played 29 verses of Just As I Am and waited 55 minutes till somebody came forward. That's just not where I'm at. The struggle is real inside your heart, and I know it, and it's okay. I just want to hold you if holding is what you need. I want to pray with you if prayer is what you need. And I want to cry out to Jesus with you if Jesus is what you need. So if no one else moves in about 60 seconds, we're just going to continue to worship, continue to pray, and we're going to celebrate who God is, one who makes a way, one who works miracles and keeps promises. That is the God that we serve. So if you'd like to come, come now.